Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, thank you very much for joining us here in studio today. I'd like to ask you, first of all, a bit about your conversation with Pope Benedict, if I can. Mm. This was your second meeting, wasn't it, really, mm. following on from your encounter at that interfaith meeting in Twickenham last September.
I had been asked to welcome him on behalf of the non-Christian faiths in Britain. And it was actually a very moving encounter. I think we felt that something had happened at that moment. And it was, you know, a sharing of faith across the boundaries. And it was very moving. And the Pope at the time told me he wanted to deepen that relationship. So I felt this visit was a way of moving that a step further.
So can you tell us anything about your conversation this morning? What issues you discussed?
We are very concerned, obviously, with the soul of Europe. I mean, Europe was built on Judeo-Christian foundations. Even the market was built on Judeo-Christian foundations. Scholars are fascinated as to how it was that China, that had been way in advance of the West until the 15th century, had invented things long before the West did, failed to develop a market economy or a democratic society or an industrial revolution. And most scholars take the view that the difference between the West and China was that Judeo-Christian heritage.
There is great concern amongst many religious leaders about this rise of the consumer culture, this erosion of our Judeo-Christian heritage. Do you see this as a passing phase, or do you think that people of faith are having increasingly to fight for their right to be part of the national conversation?
In the Jewish community, we do not feel marginalized. We find more and more people coming to synagogue. We find more and more parents wanting to send their children to Jewish schools. And the impression is growing that there is something lacking in the wider secular culture, when all that matters is what I earn, what I spend, what I buy, what I own, instead of what I am. And I think parents are beginning to say, we don't want that for our children. We want our children to learn about a much older and more spacious heritage.
You've spoken and you've written quite a lot, haven't you, about the connections between this loss of spiritual values and the current economic crisis. You say it's no coincidence, in fact, that in Britain, shopping on Sundays and the deregulation of the financial markets occurred at about the same time. And yet it seems that despite these connections, government and financial leaders seem increasingly unwilling to take seriously, to really take into consideration the voice of faith leaders.
I think faith in the modern world, and I wouldn't have it any other way, has no power at all, but it does have a great deal of influence. Now, politics is about power. So politicians and religious leaders inhabit different universes, although many politicians have strong religious faith. But it is difficult to know exactly how do you create a partnership between the two, which is one reason I came to see the Pope, because I think if Jewish and Christian voices are heard along parallel lines, then they should not underestimate the influence they have. And of course, that was very clear in terms of the visit of the Pope to Britain just over a year ago. Everyone was amazed that the interest was so acute and so widespread. And everyone saw a gentle, very spiritual, very holy person. And that had huge impact. So, yes, it is true that religion doesn't play a part in the political arena, but I'm glad about that. We should not aspire to political power. But we are talking to people, especially when they're thinking, what kind of answer do I want to give to the meaning of life, and what kind of value system do I want for my children?
Were you able to talk much this morning about interfaith relations, about the Jewish-Christian relationship?
Well, the Pope himself raised it and continually wanted to know how was that state of relationship in Britain, where, in fact, of course, it's as good as you will find anywhere in the world. He also wanted to know, just to reaffirm his belief in our shared belief in the God of Abraham, our shared commitment to the Ten Commandments, and our shared belief that society must have a spiritual dimension.
You've written a lot about interfaith relations, haven't you? Notably in your book, The Dignity of Difference. And yet, in trying to reach out to other faiths, you've been accused of betraying your traditional Orthodox Jewish teachings. What do you say to your accusers about the truth to be found in other religions?
Well, what is absolutely clear from the Bible is that you have some very godly individuals who are not part of the Abrahamic covenant. Famously, you have Melchizedek, the contemporary of Abraham, who is called by the Bible the priest of the Most High God. You have Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, a Midianite priest. And my favorite of all, which is Pharaoh's daughter, who, at great risk to herself, saves the young Moses. Without a Pharaoh's daughter, there wouldn't be a Moses. So the Bible is not partisan at all in the way it sees righteousness and godliness. It sees it in all sorts of places.
On the subject of Jewish attitudes towards the Catholic Church, there seems to be quite a lot of divisions, not perhaps just in Britain, but in other countries too, with some applauding Pope Benedict and John Paul before him for really helping to implement the spirit of Nostra Aetate, and others seeming to see the Catholic Church really only in terms of the possible beatification of Pius IX and the perceived failure to apologise for not speaking out more strongly during the Holocaust. How do you think we can move beyond these divisions?
My view is axiomatic and fundamental. The God of love and forgiveness created humanity in love and forgiveness and asks of us to love and forgive others. And that is the attitude I bring to Jewish-Christian relations. And I hope it's the attitude Christians bring to that same relationship. We recognize the extraordinary about turn that occurred in the Catholic Church at really the inspiration and depth of compassion of Pope John the 23rd, which set in motion the process that culminated in Vatican II. The result of which is that Jews and Catholics, having been estranged for many centuries, now meet again today as cherished and respected friends. You would find it hard to find a transition like that in the whole of European history. So I see the hope vastly outweighing the anxieties and the good news vastly exceeding the bad.
Do you see divisions between liberal and orthodox trends, reformists and traditionalists, if you like, in Judaism, as well as, of course, we have within the Catholic Church? Sometimes this seems to be as damaging as the tensions between the different faiths. Is this an increasing, are you concerned about an increasing polarization within the Jewish world along these lines?
No, in Britain we have actually solved the problem, and we had to solve the problem because we cannot make peace with the world if we can't make peace among ourselves. And when relationships got a little tense some 15 years ago, I sat down and said to myself, we have to develop fundamental principles of a relationship that has integrity. In the end, I formulated two principles, and they work. Number one, on all matters that affect us as Jews, regardless of our religious denomination, we will work together regardless of our religious denomination. On all matters that touch on our differences, we will agree to differ, but with respect. The result of which is that Orthodox and non-Orthodox Jews in Britain are closer together today than they were at any other time. Of course, a famous Jew, Abba Iban, once said, we're the people who can't take yes for an answer. So there are some people who have not quite caught up with reality. But the fact is, for the first time in history, I, as an Orthodox chief rabbi, sit together with Reform and Liberal rabbis as joint presidents of the Council of Christians and Jews. And on interfaith matters, as on all matters that touch on our common fate, we work together.
Looking at the document Nostra Aetate, of course, well known for its condemnation of anti-Semitism in any form, do you see, are you concerned about a rise of anti-Semitism in Europe today?
I am mortified by the return of anti-Semitism to Europe within living memory of the Holocaust. We had believed never again, but it has returned. It is extremely worrying and disturbing, and as I said very candidly at a European conference convened by Romano Prodi already 8 years ago in the European Centre in Brussels, I said Jews cannot fight anti-Semitism alone. The victim cannot cure the crime. The hated cannot cure the hate. I will fight for the right of Christians anywhere in the world to live their faith without fear, but I need them to fight for my right, the right of my people to live their faith without fear. The result is that in Britain, we have become perhaps the first country where the fight against anti-Semitism is led by non-Jews. And that is very, very moving and very significant.
So it's a coalition, you're saying, of people across the spectrum
in
Britain?
It is a coalition of parliamentarians led by the Prime Minister. Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, David Cameron have all got up in public and said quite simply in these words, I promise that Jews will never have to fight anti-Semitism alone. They've accepted that responsibility, and it's very important. At the same time, I believe in the other side of the bargain as well. So on Friday, just a few days ago, I spoke in the House of Lords about my concern and my solidarity with Christians in the Middle East who are suffering persecution and great uncertainty. There's been a mass exodus of Christians from Iraq. As many as 100,000 Christians, Coptic Christians, may have left Egypt. We have the situation of Christians in Syria entirely in doubt. And it is important that Jews, the British Jewish, the European Jewish community, stand in solidarity with Christians where they face persecution.
How much do you see the Israeli-Palestinian conflict really as the problem at the root of all these other areas you mentioned around the Middle East, and also potentially as the cause of this anti-Semitism that you say is on the rise?
I refuse to accept that for one simple reason. And I tell this to my Muslim friends and I tell this to my friends of all faiths. We must be sending a message of coexistence. From Europe to the Middle East, we must not allow ourselves to import a message of conflict from the Middle East to Europe. If the already difficult situation between Israelis and Palestinians is difficult enough in itself, that the whole of Europe should be made a proxy battlefield for that conflict will not bring peace, but on the contrary will devastate the outstandingly good relations that exist between the faiths in Europe.
The political situation seems to be at something of a stalemate. Are there any signs of hope for you at the moment in that conflict?
I have made a great distinction in all my writings between optimism and hope. And knowing history as we do, no Jew can be an optimist. But no Jew worthy of the name ever lost hope. And when it comes to peace in the Middle East between Israelis and Palestinians, I refuse to give up hope. There is still a genuine majority on both sides in favor of a two-state solution. And although the political process may have reached a momentary stalemate, as it seems to have done, nonetheless, the underlying attitudes on both sides embolden my hope to believe that a peaceful settlement is possible and will be reached.
Finally, you've said yourself that you'll be stepping down from your job in 2013 after almost a quarter of a century as the chief rabbi there. What do you see perhaps as your most significant success? What would you like to be remembered for in that job?
We tried to do three things and I think we succeeded. First, I made a pledge that we would increase the level and depth of Jewish education. And we have seen in 20 years the percentage of Jewish children at Jewish day schools go up from around 25 to 30% to nearly 70%. So we've built more Jewish day schools in the last 20 years than at any previous time of our over 350-year history. The second was I wanted to be a catalyst for creativity. I note that the Pope calls the Catholic Church today a creative minority. Now, to be a Jew is to be a member of a creative minority, and we have seen in the last 20 years an explosion in cultural and other forms of Jewish expression, some religious, some not, but all vivid, vital and full of energy, and we have a much more energetic community than we had before. And finally, I took it on myself as far as I could, just by sort of doing it, to allow the Jewish voice to be heard in the public square. I believe that Jews should not simply keep to themselves. We should seek to be a voice in the conversation of humankind. In fact, I define Judaism as the voice of hope in the conversation of humankind. And the British public have been quite extraordinarily warm in welcoming that sharing of Jewish wisdom. And I believe we are all enriched when the great faiths share their wisdom with those of any faith and those of none.
Lord Jonathan Sacks, thank you very much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you.